except to see them, only to see them.
Today the Hodot Ulahamel, in order to give thanks and to give praise to God. That's why Saul said I shouldn't read by it. I'm not supposed to read by the light, because then you're using the light. Light is there just to give praise to God for the miracles of Hanukkah. I was thinking tomorrow night, I have a 5 o'clock flight. And on the LL website says for selected flights, we have Hanukkiyot before you get on board. So I'm really interested to see what's going to happen on my flight, because for a 5 o'clock flight, basically you're bored about 10 after 4 or so. So it's just, you can do it just then, but only so much before that. So, correct. And I can just imagine, you know, there are always people on our flights, God bless them, who just assume we could do anything we wanted to. Including, I'm sure, lighting their own Hanukkiyah at the time that they think it's a kosher time to light it. So it was very sympathetic when I saw that they're going to have these outside, they said outside the plane. So I think that's a good idea, but I just want to see whether people actually pay attention to it, or whether they brought their own and they pull them out once we get up in the air. I'll tell you that story in about 2 weeks.
Away from the oxygen tank.
Yeah, Not a good thing. Not a good thing. Okay, we are on page 22B2. We'll go to last month or so, and we'll party.
The hospital. This is an issue as well.
Yeah.
And they try to do things with electrical lights, sure. And they even have Shabbat bulbs.
Right. And the Rabbin in New York has permitted that. You know, that's something which we understand. And there's all throughout the Rabbin permitted that. It's not only the liberal rabbis. When I was in Israel last week, we were visiting somebody who's in the Tel Shomer Hospital in Tel Aviv. Just outside, and it was there in Shikum, which is called rehab. Where this person couldn't be for a long time, and so we brought Shabbat candlesticks with candles, the real thing, because we inquired first. And what they do there is that they have a public area where they light the candles. Even for in rehab, because they don't have oxygen, they don't. If you get so far as to get to rehab, you don't need oxygen usually. So they actually let you do it in your room. I was told. I don't know whether it's really true, but they say that they let you do it. I guess otherwise I just have too many problems. People are just so difficult to deal with. As long as it's not a real danger, and where is a real danger, people have to respect it, of course. But New York, it's perfectly fine. New York, some of the hospitals actually have built-in Shabbat candles, electric candles. When the rooms are constructed or they're reconstructed, Mount Sinai has that.
Yeah, Mount Sinai has that.
Very nice. And by the way, with the Hanukkah menorah, you know that you fulfill your obligation to light the menorah if you light one light. So you could use the Shabbat candles that are in the hospital. And just like that, and you've suddenly fulfilled your obligation. You have to light only. This is called Mahadrim and a Mahadrim. This is those who want to do it the special of the special, like the way we light. We're so wealthy. To us, what does it mean to light six candles, eight candles? So you could realize there was a time when to own a candle. It's not a simple thing.
Just one candle in a whole box, you can do for years.
Sure.
One candle, one shamash, or one candle, and that's it.
One candle, period.
So the shamash and the candle is the same.
Well, you don't use a shamash to light one candle. All you need is to light a light, light the candle. Come on, that's the job.
You can use that. It's an old custom.
What? No, this is the Gemara. Gemara says Gemara, it says, Mitzvat Chanukah Ner Echad. Okay, the Amadrin Ner Lechol Echad. The Amadrin and Amadrin, okay, light one on every night. And then there's a machloket between the Rambam and everybody else because the Rambam. Well, that's between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. That's when the argument starts between Beit Shammai and Hillel, whether you increase the number every night or you decrease the number every night. So that's in response to the Ma'adrin Min HaMi'adrin. And in the Rambam, in the Mishneh Torah says, because it says, HaMi'adrin Kol Echad V'Echad. That's to say, each member of the family lights. Each member of the family lights. So in the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, he says that if you're Ma'adrin and I'm Ma'adrin, it doesn't mean you write one Hanukkiah. It means you write a Hanukkiah like this to everybody. Every single person writes a Hanukkiah like this. That's Ma'adrin and I'm Ma'adrin. And then that's the custom as a custom. Husband and wife light one. But children are supposed to light their own. If it's practical, and children should light their own. Because it's fun. It's good pedagogy. Good pedagogy. Okay, we're on 22b2 on the bottom right hand side of the page. Remember, we've been going through a baraita structured as al kol ha'mitim kulam, for all of the people that one is mourning who have died, and we have a law. And then the next piece of that will be al aviv v'al imo, but for his father and his mother, the law is different. Law is normally more stringent for the father and the mother than it is for the other mourners that we're obligated to mourn for. Okay, that's just the introduction. We've seen a number of things here. Let's see. The last thing we saw was the tearing of the garment. We saw that kriya, you tear a garment, you tear one garment. For the father and the mother, you tear all of the garments till the undergarment. You don't tear the undergarment, but you can tear all the garments. Or so was the interpretation, you don't tear the undergarment. Okay. Okay, al kol ha'mitim kulan ratza mavdil kamei safa shelo, ratza eino mavdil, al aviv v'al imo mavdil. Rabbi Yehuda omer, kol kriya she'eino mavdil kamei safa shelo, eino ela kera shel tishvit. Okay, now we'll take each part. The Brita says, if one wants to make the rend in the garment, because you're obligated to make a rend in the garment for someone for whom you are mourning, okay? You make a rend in your garment. If you want, you can make the rend mavdil kameh safa shelo. It is permissible to, I'll try to translate it literally and then we'll see what the commentators say. It is permissible to make a separation, kamei lifnei, before the safa. The safa we would probably translate as the hem, or something like that. What do you call it? In an undershirt, for example, a man's undershirt, you have a head opening, right? And around the opening of the head, there's a placket that's sewn in effect. Right? I don't know what you call it, a placket, though, but it's a kind of hem that makes that thicker, and it sort of gives it shape and form. Right? That's what you have. That, according to the regular Rashi, is what we're talking about here. Okay? So, if you want, you can mavdil kamei safa shelo, rasa eino mavdil. It could be you're allowed to either make that rend lifnei asafa. So, if here is where the placket is, right, up here, so you can make it lifnei, down here. Or you could make it up here. You can make it up here. Either one is okay. But al aviv v'imo mavdil. But for his father and his mother, he does it down here. He does it down here. Why? What would be the difference?
The heart.
Okay. Could be the heart. That's a basic part of the difference. Let me see if we can see the Rashi here. Ratsa Mavdil. I'm looking at the Rashi. This is about a third of the way down. This is the pseudo Rashi, as it were. Not the real Rashi, but the Rashi that's in the place of Rashi here in the text. Ratsa Mavdil Kamei Safa. She'eno b'safa shelifnei atzavar ela kamei safa shelifnei atzafa. That is to say, she'eno b'safa. You don't do it up here. You don't do it basafa, in the hem itself, but you do it lifnei asafa, beyond the hem, beyond the hem. Basafa, shlifnei asafa, shlifnei asafa, she'ena krua, v'kera tachtea, kedei she'en nir'e hakera. The reason you tear it down below is so that the tear will be obvious. It'll be obvious. If you do it up here, then it could look like it's just an extension of the neck opening. Therefore, according to the Rashi, or the Pseudo Rashi, you don't do it up here for the parent, you do it down here. Because the tear made for the parent has got to be very obvious.
Also, you're doing more damage to the garment is a sign of kind of to show your pain.
Possible.
As if it's near the edge, you can mend it later, you can make more use of it.
Could be. It's possible.
It's like making a bigger sacrifice.
But I want to read to you the real Rashi, the Rashi Ktav Yad. The Rashi Ktav Yad is the manuscript Rashi, which we have down in the very small print on the left, lower left-hand portion of the page. Oh, it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the bottom of the page. Ratzam Avdil Kamei Safa Shelo. If he wants, he can make the separation in front of the hem. Klomar Marchil Kriya Mechalal Beta Savar Kamei Safa. If he wants, he can make the rim right from the top up here and go down like that. Okay? Ratza eno matil. Or he cannot do it that way. Ela matchil v'nokev lamata. But rather, he starts and he makes a puncture down below. Lamata ni beta tavar. Below the neck opening. Below the neck opening. Keneged kreso. Kreso, across from his stomach. In other words, in the chest area, which is, say, not at the neck area, but lower down. Keneged kreso, v'korea, v'hasafa shel chaluk lebet ha-tavar eino koro. And the, up here, the hem up at the top, he doesn't cut at all. Right? You can do either one. Right? Ratza eino matio. Or, if he wants, he doesn't have to separate. Rather, he starts down below the neck opening. Okay? So that's, well, from this it doesn't seem all that different. But the commentators use the Rashi manuscript and they say exactly the opposite. They say that the other commentators say, on the basis of the Rashi manuscript, that for the father and the mother you have to make the tear up here. For somebody else you can make the tear down here. It's exactly the opposite. Why make it up there? Because once you've made it up there, in fact the garment separates. And the keran yir'eh. Mm-hmm. Alright? The tear becomes obvious. So the real issue here is which way is the tear more obvious? Yeah, one understanding of the tear is more obvious if it's just down below. The other way that it's more obvious if the tear is up above. Okay?
Does the tear have to show?
Yes. Well, that's not clear. We're going to see that, as a matter of fact, in a bit. You'll see two differences.
Because the other thing is up here, if you full beard, you're not going to see anything.
Maybe. Wait a minute until you get a little bit further. Okay? Then Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Kriya She'en Mavdil Kamei Safa Shelo, any rending, in which one does not separate the garment beyond the border of the next slit, eino ela kereshel tiflut, is a useless rending. Right? So that's according to the first interpretation. The second interpretation is lifnei means right over here. That you really have to separate everything entirely. Everything entirely. Now, let's go on a little bit further and you'll see. Amar Rabbi Abau, my, to it, just go a little further. My Tama the Rabbi Yehuda. Now we're going to see the explanation. What is the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda? Dichtiv, for it says, Vayachazek pivagadav yikraim lishnayim kraim. He held onto his garments and he tore them into two parts. That's how I translated Shnayim Kraim. Right? This is describing the Bible, Elisha, who is making a rend after the so-called death of Elijah. It's a so-called death of Elijah because Elijah goes up into heaven and described in somewhat elliptical terms, which leads to the idea of a lot that Elijah never died, which is why he's coming back. Okay? All right. Since it says anyway that he tore them, wouldn't I know that he tore them in two? How else can you tear something? Right? So why does it come and it say Lishnayim? Why does it come and say specifically Lishnayim Kraim? Ela shenir'im kfru'im kishnayim. Rather, the point is that they look torn into two. Into two. From this explanation, you have the understanding that Maimonides has, and that is later followed in the Shulchan Aruch, that what we mean by the tear is a tear actually from up here. Roughly from the top, because the idea appears to be most obvious. If you're going to tear them into two, seems to be the point is that you're going to have two garments. Well, most of the commentators therefore understood this to mean that you start at the neckline. So for the parents, therefore, you have to begin at the neckline. For somebody else, you may or you may not. The truth is that today we don't really take great care as far as this goes, and in most cases the tear is made higher. You try to make it higher, but in effect we don't wear those kinds of garments anymore also. So that to some extent affects the way we actually make our tear. Here, the point is though that you should make the tear in two. So therefore, if you're tearing a shirt, for example, we do not pierce the shirt here and then tear it. See what I'm saying? You don't pierce in the middle of the shirt. Rather, we start at the edge, just as you would start with the edge here. You tear it from the edge and you go from there. And that's the way we do it in order to do, as Rabbi Yehuda says here, in light of the garments that we actually use today. Okay, Bobby, you were going to ask?
I'm clear to the meaning of lifnei.
Nobody knows what it means.
It's usually before.
It means before, but what does it mean to say before? It's taking the neckline, which is before, this or this?
Lifnei comes from panim.
So, but still, what does it mean?
I don't think the lower would be lifnei to me.
And then I can look at it. If you're looking from here, maybe this is right? It seems to me that the correct meaning is the way we've just interpreted it, and the way the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam take it. That in fact, it's what you're saying, that it before means from up here, but it is possible to do it the other way, and the exegetical problem came from the Pseudo-Rashi. That Rashi interpreted it that way very clearly. And what happens in the development of law is if you get a text that's understood to be Rashi in the 11th century, then it has to be contended with whether it's right or wrong, as long as it's not unreasonable. It's reasonable. But in fact, that's not the way the law is. The law is that you have to do it from the top going down.
Okay? It seems to be the distinction of the parents and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the death of a child would be the most traumatic death of most people.
Not in their time. Mm-hmm. In their time, the death of a child was just another child who died. Mm-hmm. Realize, and go to any cemetery, even in New York. Even our cemeteries, and we're not 2,000 years old. I've always found this very interesting. When you go to an old cemetery, a cemetery that goes back, let's say, to the 30s. To the 30s. I'm not talking that goes back to the beginning of the 20th century, but the 30s. Even the 40s. You'll find all the cemeteries, the back of the cemeteries, filled with little babies, little kids, and kids. Kids died from whooping cough, and they died from measles, and all those things. So that the death of the child was taken as a matter of course. It's a very, very modern idea to be upset about the death of a child. Very modern. By very modern, could be longer than probably 40 years. And it's probably my lifetime that that really has started.
The laws are more stringent for the parents. But what if somebody wants to?
Keep this in mind. I don't want to answer that yet because you'll see the build-up here. It's very clear that the law is more stringent for the parents. And I don't want to answer why yet, but simply make the observation that that appears to be the case. And let's see whether it is consistently the case and where the consistency goes, because you'll see that the rending is done for even beyond the parents. And there are some people for whom one rends even more than one rends for the parent. Not a child, but for others. You'll see this shortly.
I was just going to say, disregarding the emotional level for child versus parent, the parent is the only one that we have the commandment for. So
which commandment?
The fifth commandment.
Ah.
So.
That's absolutely right. That's where I'm eventually going to go, but since you went there already, that is, I believe, the key to it all. That, as you will see, developed here more and more, the rending for the parent is all wrapped up in the obligation to honor the parent. And it may or may not be an expression of emotion, but there is externally an obligation to honor the parent, which is central to the Torah, let alone to the development after the Torah, right? That is central. And therefore, you will see these laws really reflecting that. That, I think, is the key issue. Okay? Go a little bit further. Let's read number 21, by the way, down on the bottom. I think that's a good comment. Rabbi Yehuda holds that even for relatives other than one's parents, right, even for all of them, because we said parents one way, other people the other way. Remember what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yehuda says now, any tear which is not a total rend, namely dividing the garment into two, is no tear at all. Right? It was a kera tiflut, I think. Kera shel tiflut. No, it's a rend of nothing. Not serious. Rabbi Yehuda holds that even for relatives other than one's parent, a mourner does not fulfill his rending obligation if he merely tears the next slit further. Well, in that case, the rend appears to be no more than an extension of the next slit. That's according to the Rashi, not the way I'm understanding it, but the pseudo-Rashi. Rather, in the case of all deceased relatives, the mourner fulfills the rending obligation only if he separates the garment beyond the border of the nixlit. According to Rashi manuscript, this is the other reading, see the preceding note, the meaning is that the rend must always begin at the edge of the kohar. That's what I'm arguing for here. Okay? So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's the case for everybody.
And what's the big heroic that he's saying this about kriya for someone other than one's parents? Because it says kol kriya?
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought that we're already in the category of kriya for parents, and I'd be saying any kriya that doesn't go beyond, as opposed to that he's suggesting kol kriya means
kriya. No, I think that it follows that if he goes, that's his way of almost exaggerating the point. and saying, you know, what are you talking about? Any kriya is not a kriya. You know, you're talking about just the parent. Any kriya is no kriya. How much more so than the parent? That's why I think it's being read, and I think it's reasonable. Okay? Alright, Amar Rabbi Abao Maitam. Oh, this we already did. Okay, so we'll go down to the next one after 23. I'll call him 18 Kulam. Now we're talking about you rend the garment, and afterwards, right? Particularly now you have to keep in mind what it would be like to live in a society where one had few garments. Let's say you had one garment. You have one garment. You tear the garment because it's an obligation. I said to you last week that Rabbi Lam points out in his book that the custom of tearing a ribbon only grew up in the Jewish community once the community had many garments. The more we have, the more unwilling we are to destroy anything. But when they had only one garment, then, of course, they thought. So the question is, what do you do with that one garment after you tear it? That's what we're going to deal with now. I'll call them etim kulam. For, in general, for ones, the desks that one needs to tear for, shaler liachar shiv'a umiacher liachar shloshim. One may baste after shiva, and one may actually sew it up, doing a good sewing job, after shloshim. Well, that's interesting. So if you have one garment, or even if you have other garments, this garment, after shiva you can baste it, just to put a few stitches in it, and then after shloshim you can actually sew it up and do a good sewing job. But a woman may baste it immediately because of her honor, namely because of modesty. Okay? So, even, and immediately means immediately. After the garment is torn, right in shiva, you don't have to wait till after shiva, right in shiva, a woman can baste the garment. Because we see this consistently, unthinkable that a woman would be exposed. The exposure is just not possible, so therefore you have to base it up.
So if we took care of that by her turning the garment.
I was
thinking
it too.
Would be exposure. It's not about exposure, but just
but to know
not honorable for one to be wearing a quote unquote here.
That's explain the
notion. All right, that's good. Something that. Ritva explains that the son lies in the woman being exposed. Hence, he explains that the Brachah does not follow the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar and the Brachah above, rules that a woman first rends her inner garment, tears it around, only then rends her outer garment, so that no time is she exposed. Rather, this Brachah follows the view of the Tanakhama there, the first Tanakh. Rabbi Onatan's Miluniel says that it is unseemly for a woman to wear a torn garment even if her skin is not exposed. So there's all the possibilities. Okay? Okay. Now the Gemara goes on. Ki ata Rabin Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabin, remember, was one of the Nechute. He was one of the teachers from Babylonia who would go to the land of Israel and then would return to Babylonia in order to bring the traditions of the land of Israel to Babylonia. So Rabbi Yochanan lived in Tiberias, in the north of Israel, and he goes back, Ravin goes back and brings the tradition from the land of Israel. I'll call a metim ratzakorea biyad, ratzakorea bikli. For all of the people for whom one is mourning, one can make the rend with a hand or with an object. Alavi v'imo v'yat. But for a parent, father or mother, one has to make it with the hand. Now, the object, take a look at the Rashi manuscript. If he has a comment there. Bichli, right, with a utensil, here he says bisakin, bisakin, with a knife. So in other words, in making the rend, one can do it for most people with, you can make the rend with a knife.
Scissors.
Knife, whatever you use. Generally we use a razor type object. And in fact, it would probably be bigger. But for the parent, one has to actually tear. What would be the difference in the tear in these two circumstances? Yeah, exactly. Because the tear that you make with a knife will be a clean tear. And it's easier and neater to sew up. The tear that you make just by ripping is an unkempt tear. It's you can't control how it works. And therefore, it's much harder to sew up. Again, here you see that the parental tear is a more obvious tear and has to be a more obvious tear.
But also, if you tear, then it's going to tear along the wing. So you're really going to be able to separate the garment into two rather than cutting across the wing. The other thing is, how would you tear your shirt in a kosher way? I mean, you cut through the collar. I don't understand what it's supposed to look like.
You cut through what I'll call the flap.
I mean, if you're going to come from the collar all the way down and separate it into two,
right?
Then you would have to cut through the collar.
You cut through somewhere here, and just the key thing is, though, that you tear it out. The main thing is, if you've seen this on people, when you have a real rend like that, it flaps over.
Or tear a pocket or something like that.
Well, but you don't tear a pocket because the pocket is not close enough to the skin. We read that you have to, the question was how close to the skin you have to come. But tearing a pocket is probably too distant, probably. And also, if you were to do such a thing, you can't do it on the seam. Because if you did it on the seam, it might seem like the seam had unraveled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So again, it has to be obvious. If you were to do it and you were to tear it across the seam, then it might be okay. But we're governed here by the idea of what we just read before, that it should have connection to the neck area. Right? So that the actual garment itself should be split in two. So whether one does that right at the neck or slightly below the neck, still in effect you're turning the garment into two. Right? When you do that. Okay, let's keep going. Now the Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Al Kol HaMetim Kulan Mibifnim. For all of the dead for whom one mourns, you make the rend Mibifnim, inside. Al Avivi Al Imo Korea Mibachutz. For father and mother, you do it on the outside. No, it's not at all clear what that means. Among the commentators, let's see if we have a Rashi, the Pseudo Rashi here. Remi Vifnim. Okay. Pseudo Rashi says, Tachat Hamiktorin Shalo. Underneath, what will we call it? The waistcoat, maybe we would call it. Underneath the waistcoat, underneath the vest, as it were. So actually, you do the tear, some of you are wearing several garments, you actually do the tear underneath a garment that's a covering garment. Right, that's the way the Rashi is explaining it.
You can tear a t-shirt.
Korea mi bifnim. Tachat HaMiktorin, okay, that you do it, and then if the other one is you do outside, not underneath anything, but on the top, okay? So that's the way That Rashi understands it. The Rashi manuscript says the following. This is just four lines in the bottom. Mibifnim, inside, v'cheder. V'cheder, she'en tzarich likroa bifnei ha'am. There is no need to tear in front of people. So in other words, bifnim means in private. And not bifnim, what's the language for not bifnim? It's mibachutz. Mibachutz means in public. So it's a private public thing. Okay? And here too, I think it's probably this is the correct explanation. That's the explanation of Rambam, Maimonides. It's the explanation of Shulchan Aruch. The law is an issue of private and public. It's private and public thing. That the public, when they're supposed to lend for father and mother in public. Right? Now, your observation before, you can see the way in which we are seeing that observation being underlined again and again, I think. Let's go a little bit further. And look what Rav Chisda says. V'chein lanasi. And this applies also to the Nasi, who must rend his garments on the outside. Now, this is bringing in a category that we didn't expect. Mm-hmm. For the first time now, we see that there is a public rending of garments for the leader of the community. The Nasi is the political leader of the community. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was the political leader. Right? The Av Bed Din is the religious leader. In Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it was actually the same person becomes the religious and the
father
secular leader.
So it looks like a father figure.
Correct. The leadership, political leadership, to some extent, is seen in terms of parental leadership. For the president, everybody tears publicly.
Hmm.
For the Nasi, everybody tears publicly. That's
if they are the president while they die,
have
somebody who previously was president?
While they die. While they are president while they die. Okay. Then the Gemara comes and raises an objection from a Baraita. Lo hushvu li'aviv li'imo ela li'ichui bilvad. This is from later on in the Talmud. They, and apparently included in they is the Nasi. The Nasi is comparable to the father and the mother only as far as sewing up goes. That is to say that you can't sew up the rend made for the Nasi, just as you can't sew up the rend made for a father and a mother. Right? You can only leave it forever. Right? My love afilu l'Nasi. The Gemara answers, it's saying, even the Nasi, lo levar minasi. Now it refers to all those mentioned in the Brayta, except for the Nasi for whom the rend is indeed made on the outside as for one's father or mother. Well, for the Nasi, anyway, you have to make the rend on the outside for the Nasi. It has to be a public Nasi, a public rend. Now, here is going to be just a story. Nasi HaShachis, the Nasi died, referring to some event in history. Arma le Rav Chisda le Rav Chanan bar Rava. Said Rav Chisda to Rav Chanan bar Rava, say asita v'kumale, turn over a mortar. A mortar means a tub. Turn over a tub and stand on top of it. The achve kriyala alma, and show the public your rending. So in other words, he's saying to him after the Nasi dies that you have to get up on a stand and actually show the fact that the rabbi has made a rend for the sake of the Nasi. Okay? I want to go, let's keep going on now. Al Chacham, for a sage, right? A sage here, as we would say for the rabbi, one bears choletz mi'amim, one bears the shoulder on the right side. We had learned about that about 2-3 weeks ago, where we saw that that custom was no longer being followed by the Middle Ages. We're no longer bearing the shoulder. But here, while this was still being done, says that for the chacham, I translated for the rabbi, one bears the shoulder on the right. Alav betin mismol. For the head of the betin, now remember, when you're making kriya, for whom do you tear on the right side? For whom do you tear on the left side?
Parents
on the left, other people on the right. What is on the left side? The heart. The heart is on the left side. Similarly you have here, a chacham, just a regular rabbi you do on the right side. But for the abbeitin, for the rabbi of rabbis, you do on the left side. Okay? Then, al nasi, for the nasi, nikan u mikan. You do on both sides. For the nasi, you do on both sides.
So, who mourns for the nasi?
The whole community.
The whole community.
Everybody.
Everybody rents?
Everybody rents. It's a very good idea. We don't, you know, when you have lived, I've lived through the death of a few people who were in office. Each case, it was an assassination. I'm thinking of the Kennedy assassination and the Rabin assassination. Did anyone die in office in my time? I can't remember anybody. But just take those two times.
One was president.
In both of those cases, I remember writing at the Kennedy, when I was a student then. I was a student and I walked out into Harvard Square after John Kennedy was killed. People were weeping in the streets. And those of us who remember that, and are even as I bring up the emotion, it's a terrible emotion. I mean, that was a mass sense of mourning. And what happened subsequently was that the whole country was in mourning. It was a tremendous feeling of people going through a mourning procedure.
What does that mean, that the population did shiva?
You'll see. Correct. There is a kind of shiva that the population should sit. You'll see. It's going to come up right now. It's not exactly shiva, but it's a kind of shiva that was appropriate.
What happened when Rabin died? I don't remember seeing people in general.
No, the Rabin was. I'm just saying that when you have major public figures who die, there is a sense of loss which is psychologically deep that goes throughout the entire population.
And Princess died.
Yeah, I mean, there's another one. All of these are not simple cases. The two were murders that we said first. The Princess Di was an accident. But also, in a country like that, were you in England when that happened?
I was there.
What was the public reaction?
Major, major outpour of mourning. Major.
So the question that happens, you know, in a case like that, let's say, as you're going to see here, the question is, do you close government offices? Do you put the flags at half staff? Now, what are the public forms of mourning that are appropriate in different communities?
There was a debate.
Yeah. I'm sure there was a debate. Okay. And let's say, God forbid, the time will come, the Queen will die. Okay? I'm sure there will be a massive sense of mourning in England.
There's a whole protocol.
Oh,
I'm sure there's a whole protocol. Oh, absolutely. But for an ex-princess, it's...
Correct. But we're dealing with the prescribed protocols here. You're dealing with a society where you do have leadership, where the assumption is that leadership is very important. And the comparison that where this is going out from, this is coming out of the parental role.
So what happened when Rabin died in a theocracy like Israel?
Israel's no theocracy.
Did everybody...
I don't think that it was quite said.
The point is, just to go back to my comment to what you said, Israel is not a theocracy, and therefore there was no formal religious reaction whatsoever, because it was considered to be not comparable to this.
But 100,000 people came, correct, you know, on the seventh day,
and I was in Israel not too long after, probably 2 weeks after, and I went to Har Herzl. You should have. I took pictures there. I have pictures of Har Herzl. People were coming, weeping at the grave. Young people, 15, 20 years old, were coming, weeping at the grave, and lighting all over the grave was yardside lamps. It was a fresh grave then. Of course, there was no gravestone at that point. It was before that. It was just a tremendous sense. Almost to this day, people who lived through that, Israelis who lived that, and for whom it was at the moment a very powerful and terrible experience, still live that experience right up to this.
Can you just maybe say a little bit more about the Nasi in terms of their secular and their religious role?
Okay, let's go a little bit further, because let's see the protocols here as they in fact work out. Let's go just a little bit here. We're in 22b4. Okay, down on the left side of the last line on the page. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbi's thought. Chacham shemet bet midrasho batel. When the chacham dies, when the rabbi dies, his house of study, he cancels its sessions. Now, keep in mind that's very unusual, because that a house of study should cancel sessions is very odd. Because if there's any basic idea in rabbinic Judaism, it is that you should study. But therefore, that's the strength of it. That in fact, the school is closed when the chacham dies. Av Beit Din Shemit, when the head of the court dies, Kol Batei Midrashot Shebeiro Betelim, all of the houses of study in his city close. V'nichnesin lebet haKnesset u'mishanin mekomam. Everybody goes into the synagogue. Everybody who would go into the synagogue, when they go into the synagogue, they go in, and they change their place. They don't sit in their normal seat. Mm-hmm. So this is a sense of the public mourning. There's a topsy-turviness to it. Everybody can, when you go to the synagogue, everybody changes their seat. Hayoshvim b'tzafon, yoshvim b'darom. Those who would normally sit on the north sit on the south. Hayoshvim b'darom, yoshvim b'tzafon. Those who sit on the south go into the north. Okay? So everybody has to change a place. So a very interesting type of reaction. And you can understand it, you know, it's a way of doing something publicly in the context, because the context is the context of an Avbet Din, the head of the court. It's in the community of people who respect that type of leadership, and the form of response is that you call off classes, and everybody changes their seat in the synagogue. So it's not Shiva. It's not really Shiva, but it is a form of response. And of course, there is a rending of the garments. We already saw that. Okay? Nasi Shemit, when the Nasi dies, Batei Midrashot Kulam Batei, all of the houses of study are closed. Uvnei HaKnesset Nichmesin LeBet HaKnesset, and the people from the synagogue go into the synagogue. The Korin Shiva Yotzin, and they read the Torah and then leave. Now, probably what this means is that when the Nasi dies, you don't hold regular synagogue services. Normally, it is considered to be better to pray with the Minyan than to pray on one's own. When the Nasi dies, people stay away from the synagogue. The synagogue is in mourning, as it were, with the exception of the public reading of the Torah. the public reading of the Torah, which is ordained for Monday, Thursday, and Saturday, that goes on. So that people don't do the normal davening, but for the public reading of the Torah, they come in, public reading is done, they leave. So that the central religious institution then, not only the schools are closed, but in a way, the synagogues are closed as well.
There's no prayer.
No public prayer. Your obligation to pray is no different.
Your first obligation
is the same. But the public prayer is not done.
Do you read Parsha HaShavua?
At this time, did women go to synagogue?
No. Assumption is that women did not. Assumption is that women did not.
Do you read Parsha HaShavua?
Correct. You read Parsha HaShavua. You read, and there's a question among the commentators how this is to be understood. Since it says Shiva, it could mean that you only go on Saturday when you have seven people called to the Torah, and on Monday and Thursday you don't. Others read this passage to say, well, this is a shorthand of saying whenever the Torah is read. The point being that the public reading of the Torah has to be maintained, and you can't read the Torah without a public. We nearly had that problem this morning. Is it this morning? I think it was this morning.
This morning, right.
For a while we were touch and go there. And eventually we had a meeting. But it was key this morning because this morning was a public reading of the Torah. And we couldn't read the Torah until we had a minyan. Right? It was cold. Very big problem with minyan. It was cold. Right? And it's getting to be vacation time. Some people are starting to go away. So you need the minyan in order to read the Torah.
Yes. On the question of the Nasi, somebody mentioned the Queen of England. But to the best of my knowledge, she's the only head of state who's also the head of the church.
That I couldn't tell you, maybe other people. I'm not an expert.
The Anglican Church.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Where?
Where?
Well,
I'm sure
they're on.
Iran,
so he's
supposed
to come in this
whatever. Yeah, Iran, right. Okay, let's just read to the end of the paragraph. Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha Omer, Lo sheyelchu v'yitayelu bashuk. This is not to say that because people don't go to the synagogue and they don't go to the house of study, that they should just walk around in the marketplace. They should go strolling in the marketplace. Eliyoshvin v'tomim. But they should sit and be quiet.
Right.
Sit in silence. They should sit in silence. The enomim shmua v'agada v'vet avel. And one doesn't, as we learned already, one doesn't teach Talmud or Agadah in the house of mourning, which is generally the case, and it's true also in this specific case. Amru alav, wait a second. Al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, Sheyaomer Shmu'ava Agadah b'Beit Avel. One rabbi says, no, you have to study Torah even in the house of mourning. So he was of the opinion that it is permissible to study Torah even in the house of mourning.
To me, the Shemana Agadah is like a gossip and tells me about what happened.
The Talmud doesn't understand that. Shmua means Talmud.
Yeah.
And Shmua means law. And Agadah. I don't know. It means law and lore. Shmua and Agadah. Okay?
That's a lot.
The law goes, we don't, well, that's different. It's different. We're not allowed to generally study that. Correct.
You don't say when you don't have minyan to study, then you can read some paragraphs from Tehillim or.
Correct. If you don't have
a
minyan, there are things to do and you don't have a minyan. Okay, any questions?
Is it this word nasi, has a specific meaning?
Yes.
I mean, it was defined just for that time?
Correct. The Nasi in this period of time was, I've said, the secular leader of the Jewish community. In Roman times, in late Roman times, the Jewish community had a secular leader to whom the Romans would turn. Okay? That person was the Nasi. Now, the prestige, therefore, of the Nasi was as a result of secular leadership, not a religious leadership in theory. But in fact, what happened was that frequently the Nasi also turned out to be the religious leader as well. As was the case with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the one who is the author of the Mishnah. It's called Rabbi Judah the Nasi. Now, he had the position of Nasi, which was, in a way, the secular leadership, but he was also the religious leader of the community. So it's not easy to separate these things. Sometimes they were separable, sometimes they were not separable, depending upon the individuals. Okay?
Well, maybe originally the word meant most prominent, and then it became like a position.
It comes from it, sure. I mean, you have it in this morning's reading of the Torah. We're reading for Chanukah, the Nasi. The Nasi is the leader of the tribe.
Who brings the offering.
Who brings the offering, exactly. And it's Parshat Naso that we're
saying.
The Nasi brings the offering. He lifts up the offering. Okay? That's what we read in the Torah every morning of Chanukah. Okay?
Well, then how do we interpret who is in the sea now?
You know, you can't. Because you could interpret, but it would be a stretch because we don't have that kind of structure anymore. Now, you'll see this in certain communities. You'll see it in the Haredi community in particular, the ultra-Orthodox community, where when a particular leader, or in the Hasidic community, and the Rebbe dies, Rebbe of a Hasidic community, has that position, which we don't have in the non-Hasidic world, or in the Misnagdish world, in the ultra-Orthodox but non-Hasidic world, they have people who are in that position of leadership. Or among the Sephardim, for example, Rabbi Avadi Yosef, among the Sephardim, God forbid, when the time comes and he passes on, you will see some of these things happening, I'm sure. Because the Sephardim will interpret this Gemara as applying to Rabbi Avadi Yosef. I bet we're going to see things like that. Okay? Yes, go.
It's sort of interesting that the Nasi is really placed above parents. That's what seems really strange. That for a parent, you just rent on one side,
mm-hmm.
but for a political leader,
mm-hmm.
it seems like you're mourning even to a greater extent by mm-hmm. renting on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
That seems very odd.
It is very interesting. And of course, it's not really true that you mourn more for the Nasi, because the laws of Sheva don't apply to the Nasi. Right? Just some of these laws apply. Some of the laws apply. And you can see what they are. They are the laws of respective authority.
Yeah.
That's really what you're dealing with here. When we said that the honor of the father and the mother, right, many of the commentators on that passage of the Torah and in the Talmud which discusses it, say that this is the honor of the parent reflects the honor of God. Right? Because of authority. Parents are one level of authority. God is the ultimate level of authority. Well, if that's true, the truth is that in society there are several levels of authority. And secular or religious authority also has significance as society actually works. So even though it's not the same, there are aspects of it that are comparable. Because there are aspects of authority that are comparable between the parent and authorities other than parents.
Except in this instance, it seems greater when you're ending both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
I can't help thinking there's a political dimension here.
It could very well be.
Because, I mean, from the Torah standpoint, there are only limitations to the kings. Secular authority, you know, all of the things he's not supposed to do. He gets no authority whatsoever. And of course, the notion that God says, if you want a king, have a king, but, you know, that's your problem, not mine. So there isn't a lot of Torah thought about how crucial secular authority is. But here, the according of such prestige, I think, must have a political dimension to show that the Jewish community is united, and that as a result, they're not easily fragmented, and they're probably very dangerous to look fragmented. You only have to look around the world today to know that the unity of political authority, the symbolism of that is so important. So I can't help but think that so much
of it correct. I think absolutely you hit the nail on the head.
The only thing that I remember very vaguely is that is there something about that you can interrupt the Shemona Esrei if the king comes in? So that's another indication of kind of political practicality or showing of authority for the king or for the Nazi. The secular Nazi, right? Is that the same thing?
Probably. But there, I just reminded the interpretation there. The Rambam says that that it's you can move for the respect of the king, that's only a Gentile king and not a Jewish king. Why? Because a Jewish king would understand that you were saying the Shemona Esrei. But a Gentile king would say, what's this? They're not respecting my authority, and it's dangerous. Because it's dangerous, we don't ask you to take your life and to put your life into danger. Because the example that follows that in the Mishnah is a snake. If a snake wraps itself around your foot, you can get away from the snake. So the king is considered to be analogous to the snake.
That's even more consistent.
When Kennedy died, did Jews do this?
Not to my knowledge.
Would they have?
Probably not. Probably wouldn't have been appropriate. But I always wondered to myself, you know, if a country really works, there should be protocols. There should be protocols that everybody understands. And they should be widely shared and widely practiced. And we should all know what they are. You know, children go to school, should know that when and if, God forbid, the president dies, this is the law. And I would think they should learn that because it cultivates respect for authority. Well, we, of course, live in a society that cultivates disrespect for authority, not respect for authority. I think it's really helpful for a society to have that level of respect and for people, particularly children and others, to learn it and to respect it. I don't think it's a bad idea. What? Yeah, for the flood to some extent. To some extent. Yeah, we have a protocol for the flood.
We tend to not talk about the eventual death. It's like treat it as if it doesn't exist.
Yes, it's a societal thing about death.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear about
it. It's like an unfortunate event. You don't plan for that. You don't think about it.
Well, here we are sitting, studying all about
it.
It's different in the military. The military has a very, very structured protocol and etiquette for a death. Okay, and everybody understands it. There's no question about it.
That's right.
It's a
not necessarily. Maybe or may not be. Still, there's a protocol for how to observe it.
There a hierarchy too?
Oh sure, definitely hierarchy.
Besides what happens with it, buried, how they're buried.
Sure. This is it's a similar idea. Well, friends, we shall pick up here in the new secular year. Tonight now is a double holiday. It's the sixth night of Hanukkah, and it's Rosh Chodesh Tevet. Tonight is the beginning of the new month, it's Rosh Chodesh, which is why our service begins at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. We start early because they say Musaf tomorrow. So we have double reason to celebrate. Chag Sameach, Hanukkah Sameach.
Rabbi and I got to like twice today.
We did earlier this morning, but earlier this morning was 5. Now we're on 6. Right?
Are you allowed to do it in the morning?
Yeah, we do it in the morning. Every day we do it in the minyan.
I
didn't see yesterday. Weren't you in the minyan yesterday?
I saw it, but I didn't
know. You thought it was just from the night before?
No. But my question that I didn't get.
You can't fulfill your obligation.
Dark.
Can't be an obligation. Sun is a custom of dominion.
Not the obligation.
No, can't fulfill your obligation. Sun as a custom of dominion in the morning. The Tersume needs to publicize the miracle of God. Since the community is gathering together, you light at that time.
Quite a menorah. Quite a chanukiah.
Isn't that nice? Oh, yeah. So pretty.
The question I asked about the rules of mourning, if you want to extend, like you want to rent for a spouse the way you rent for a parent, are you allowed to? No. If you want to extend the beyond Shloshim to a year, if you want, I see a lot of people saying Kaddish for a spouse, you are full of that.
I don't argue against that. Particularly where there's a lot of cases where the children are not saying nobody's saying I'm particularly sympathetic in a case like that. We've had a number of cases here where we'll see the people, the spouse does not say it for a spouse. The child says it for a whole year. But again, we make exceptions, and I think it makes sense to make exceptions.
But I think that a lot of people are under the impression
that they have to be involved. And if he just, you know, talk to him, just look somewhere. If he says it, then I'll just
keep it in mind. But the way you're your radio, carrying your phone, carrying both of them, that
No. Well, we just moved in and part of the department, and you've got to be a part of the Piedmont project.
Oh, you can do that.